At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hello, my confidant, my sweet ass, brilliant, emotional confidant. Welcome to another episode of Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. I am your host, Kelsey Dara, and I'm so excited for this week's guest. How do I describe how we met? You are a friend of my best friend, who's also coming over the second we stop recording to do a video with me. And then the second he stops recording that video with me, he's going to a movie with you. That friend is Zach Nui Towers. I'm so excited to introduce this week's guest, clinical psychologist, J.D. Bartek.
Hello. I love that. I mean, who needs an audience when we've got just raucous applause?
Yes. Thrilling. Raw talent over here. Mm-hmm. Zach Nui Towers is our mutual who,
yeah,
I feel like, what a mutual to have in common. Zach, everyone knows he's been on the podcast a million times, co-host of Dating No Filter, host of his own podcast, Good Morning Sodomites, which I want to start the podcast by talking about his podcast that you were on because, oh my God, I thought I was going to have this like very specific laid out questions about what it's like to be a young, good looking therapist in today's society, what the queer experience is like as a therapist. And then I started listening to Zach's podcast where you were a guest this morning. And I think the title was called Dicks Everywhere. And the first thing I learned about is, were you on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
I was. Yeah, I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. In the middle of COVID, like deep, deep COVID times, like, yeah.
Stop.
No audience.
How
who
was
wants
that?
To be a millionaire. Don't shake Jimmy Kimmel's hand. Who wants to be a millionaire? Not because Jimmy Kimmel's a millionaire, because COVID.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I did not realize Jimmy Kimmel was the host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire now.
Yeah.
And how is he? Spill the tea.
I mean, here's the thing. I know Jimmy Kimmel as like, you know, very straight man show, you know, host of late night and the Oscars and things where,
yes,
where like, he's not really in my Venn diagram of things I pay a lot, yes, of attention to. That he could not have been cooler. Like he was,
aww,
so like, that is a queer ally right there. He wanted me to make some money and that felt very clear. It was, yeah, it was really fun. He like between commercial breaks would just like talk to me and was like really focused, aww, on like getting to know me. I thought, and you know, I've been in LA a long time. When you meet a famous, yeah, person, particularly they're at work, I was like, I don't expect you to be,
no,
my friend. Like, I don't expect you to be, right, rude, certainly, but like, you don't have to like, we don't, and I walked
talk
away from that being
me,
like, are we friends? Like, should I DM him on Instagram and be like, hey, it's me from that show.
Remember me?
You gave me
a
bunch
of money. I mean, did you DM him?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
You had to keep it cool. You
had
to
keep it cool.
Chill.
Yeah.
Wait, are you allowed to tell me if you're a millionaire now? Or do you have to like,
oh, it
point
aired,
people to go watch the show?
Oh, no. I mean, no. Actually.
Tell me!
Yeah, I did not win $1 million. I won $250,000 though.
Bitch, so you're a quarter millionaire.
I mean, before taxes a year ago. So I let's that I don't know that I was.
All right, so you're back to regular. You're totally normal.
I'm regular status. Although as somebody who just finished, like I graduated with my doctorate in 2020, and I gotta say,
yes,
like I don't know a lot of my peers that paid for school on loans that actually have some money,
hey,
in savings. So,
hey,
is it okay?
That's actually, you're an anomaly then. You've actually come out up somehow. That's,
yeah,
pretty,
oh,
amazing.
I still owe all of my loans, but I've got a savings account, which I didn't really have before, so that's nice.
There you go. And were you a fan of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? How did that come about? I know this is not anything about what actually brought you on the podcast to talk about, but I'm so fucking fascinated.
Well, it's a weird thing. Like, it's such a bizarre experience. So I mean, I'm 35. And so, like, when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire happened, it was like the craze that swept the nation. It was appointment television. Yes. So, I mean, I was like 12 or 13 when this happened. And I have always considered myself to be a very bright person, to the degree where as a child I was like, I will win $1 million. Fun fact,
yeah.
I did not win $1 million. And I also have learned a lot about the limits of my intelligence that I didn't have at 12. But I always kind of have liked trivia and things. And then a friend in the middle of, like, it was like July 2020, was like, I just applied to be on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And I was like, send me that link. And she sent me the link, and I was like laying in bed at like 7:30 in the morning, and I filled out this application, and I forgot about it because as anybody in LA knows, anytime you submit yourself for anything, the best thing you can do is forget you've done it.
Yes. Amen.
And then I got a call like 2 or 3 weeks later that was like, hi, this is so-and-so from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. We'd love to talk to you. And then I had to do this whole screening process. I went on the show and it is the most hectic, surreal 2 hours of your life.
Because it was only 2 hours?
Well, probably I was on the lot for four.
Right, a lot longer.
I was on the lot for about
because
four.
Because it's only 15 questions.
15 questions total. I mean, do-do-do-do. What do you think the answer is? Talk it through. Think it out. Like, the lights are there. There's, like, music pinging. The floor is glowing. And, like, a very famous person is looking you in the eye, calling you by name and saying that this multiple choice question is worth $500,000. And you're like,
oh my God,
that's not a thing. That's not like,
this is not normal.
And so my friends who watched the show were like, you don't seem nervous at all. And I really, by the time you're there, it's sort of like, this is a fake thing. Like because the stakes of answering a multiple choice question for $500,000 is so ludicrous. Yeah.
So insane.
Insane.
Wait, can you tell me what question you lost on?
Yeah. So it was for $500,000. My only regret is that I never got to know what the $1 million question was, which I just wish. So I got to the 14th question, but,
that's a fucking, like, that's a fucking profile bit to put in for their, like, I got to 14th question on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That's something to fucking write home about.
I know. I did. In fact, I was tied for the highest cash grab for a not celebrity this season. Celebrities, I think they get easier questions. Who knows?
Yeah. Who the fuck? Celebrity, whatever.
What's his name?
They're probably fed some
Roy
answers.
Choi won $1 million.
Oh, I love Roy Choi.
Yeah, he's very smart.
Oh,
cool.
Okay. You know what? Cool. Fine. We'll allow that. Yeah, for charity.
Yes. So the question was something to the tune of, and this is on YouTube. You can find it. Actually, I highly recommend people find this YouTube video only to look, like, you don't have to watch it. Just read the comments because maybe it's the $250,000 question. The comments are so absurd on these YouTube videos because people will be like, this guy just wants to hear himself talk and yada, yada, yada.
What?
In a way where, like, this is for, this question is for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I didn't rush. B of all, there are editors. Like, if they want me to talk less, somebody else will
they
do
could've.
It. So, like, please. I didn't know how much of any of this would make it. But the very best one is if you go all the way down to the bottom of one of the videos, somebody just wrote gay. And then it just has two likes. There's just like two thumbs up.
I'm like shook they didn't like tie that into your story of like, you're a gay psychologist in Los Angeles teaching at a university. Like, I feel like wasn't part of your journey story.
It was definitely produced in the sense that, like, they asked, like, what was going on in COVID. And I talked about, some family stuff, which, like, everybody had family stuff. And I talked about the uprisings and everything that were going on. And I did, Black Lives Matter marches, which I said, like, I've been marching in these things. And I get there and the producer's like prepping me and she's like, so you ran and organized the marches for Black Lives Matter. I was like, I did not do that. guy did not, please do not, say that this white guy is going on TV claiming credit for these. I was like, do not, no,
literally
no, no,
literally no, no. How you get canceled.
I was like, no. I was feet, I was a body, yeah. I was present. Please do not. And, yes. And Jimmy did not, thank God. Because they also tell you, don't contradict Jimmy. Which I think to many seems very scary and like dictatorial, but I think it's really just the rules of improv. Yeah. It's like, say yes. Like, yes. Just say yes. We don't want to see you disagree. Just always say yes.
No.
And.
Because then you get like the Dakota Johnson moment with Ellen DeGeneres, whatever the fuck her name is, Dakota, whatever, where it's like, no, Ellen. That, and then you go viral for all the wrong reasons, and that's not why you're there. To try to win.
I think people are six of one, half dozen of the other on that. I think some people loved that tension.
Love that. It was time for her. Her time was up.
Yeah. And someday somebody will do that to Dakota and we'll all.
The circle of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. Wait, okay. So what fucking question did you lose on?
It was like, ironically, a no, A-N-O, means yes. In which language? And the options were Czech, Arabic, Portuguese, or Korean. A no means yes in Czech, Portuguese, Arabic, or Korean.
Can I guess? And then will you go like,
okay. Yeah.
Did you have any lifelines or 50-50 left?
I had one lifeline and it was to ask the host. So I got to ask Jimmy, which I actually felt good about because I was like, Jimmy, you've been to more places than me. You are richer than me. So you've traveled more.
You should know this.
Yeah. And he very kindly.
So did you use it?
I did use it. And he very kindly said, I'm not going to mess with you on this. I do not know the answer. And I don't want to give you. And, which I appreciate him not trying to like bargain with my. I mean, was that for $500,000?
I mean, to him, that's like pocket change. But for the stakes.
I wonder
sure
how much he made in that 2 hours while I made. Yeah.
We're pulling back the curtain. Okay, my guess, and by the way, fucking thanks for nothing, Jimmy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I could never be on this show.
I did get $250,000, so like, thanks for something, Jimmy. So,
okay. Say thanks for a little bit, Jimmy. Thanks for like your week salary. I would guess check.
You're going on to $1,000,000. That's the right answer.
You're kidding.
That's the right
answer. What did you say?
Well, I walked away. Because if you guess and you get it wrong, you lose all your money.
Right.
So I chose to walk away, but then I guessed check. God. I guessed check as well.
But, motherfucker!
But it's different, right? The stakes of guessing, I'll say check.
No.
Versus being like, for $500,000. Because if I lost,
no way.
I could either walk away with 250, or if I got it wrong, I would leave with 32.
Oh, no, that's way too big. Like, as just an intelligent person, you're like, it's not worth it.
It's not worth it. Yeah.
You know, I play the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire at Dave and Buster's all the time. And I probably never gotten past, like, the $10,000. My anxiety way too fucking high. I'd be fearful of, like, looking dumb. Like, you felt good. You were like, I was a two-day episode. I went very far. Like, do you feel pretty confident about you're winning?
I felt great about winning. I certainly was the day of really, really terrified, especially with what I do for work. That because forever when someone Googles me, they'll find that, which is fine. But my fear was, what if I lose on $100 and I go viral for being like the dumbest guy?
And then no one ever wants to come see you as a psychologist.
Yeah, then I just seem like an idiot forever.
I'm glad you found a way to tie it back into what you're actually here for. I can't believe we spent a whole 10 fucking minutes, but that's just so fascinating. And the fact that you won so much, that's like, I'm really talking to like a special person here, not just because of what you do, but I'm
talking to a lucky person. Certainly.
It's a good bragging like party fact when you go to places.
It's a weird one.
As your new friend, I will now only introduce you as the guy who won $250,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Thank you. Yeah. There's not a lot of us, but so I'm happy to be in that club.
I can't wait to watch that episode too.
Oh, please do. This is going to make me sound like a real nightmare. So I actually discovered that I have family in LA because of this show. And I discovered it because my second cousin was on Jeopardy. like the week before.
What?
I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
You're kidding.
No. And he won 4 times. He was on 5 nights of Jeopardy.
Holy shit. Is that a lot of money?
He won $90,000.
Oh, so he's not you.
Well, here's the thing. He's got all the prestige and like sure. just less of a payout. Yeah.
And wait, and you didn't know that was your cousin?
Well, so he's my, it's like my, our grandparents are siblings. So he's like my second cousin.
Got it.
He's like,
okay.
He's from like the fancy, he's from the fancy part of the family. And I'm from
got
the
it.
Like, less fancy part of the family. Just in case anybody listens.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. If I say like.
That is so fascinating.
Like trash dumpster. Can you edit that out just in case? Just
yeah,
for
sure.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, no. I mean, like I am originally from, I grew up in Florida. So like whatever okay. that says about me as a person, I feel like people are just going to assume anyway. Like, and I kind of own it and I take it as part of my what makes me so great. It's why yeah. I have such a great personality.
Yes.
I sure as fuck didn't rely on my brain power or my looks. That's for sure.
I mean, you could rely on both or either, I think.
Stop.
Half of
okay,
both.
Okay. Seriously. Now, we're here to talk about what I find fascinating about you, which is we met at Zach's birthday party. Mm-hmm. And I had like immediately gravitated towards you because you were the only person, it was an outdoor birthday party, and you were the only person wearing like a fantastic pea coat moment. And you were like dressed like you had just come out of like an episode of Succession. And I was like, I want to talk to him. Let me like go mosey on over to this person. And I found out, was it that you had just gotten your, but you had just done something important.
I had very recently before then passed my very last licensing exam.
And that's a big fucking deal. Congratulations.
Thank you. After a lot of years of grad school. And then it's thousands of hours even after grad school of more therapy experience before you can do all the tests. So, yeah.
Yes. And so I started like asking you all these questions about psychology and what it took to become. And I was like, all right, you just got to come on the podcast because you are so like, you are me. I see myself in you. I see you as like a representative of my generation. And I've been someone who's always had older psychologist, psychiatrist, therapist. I've always, I never got along with straight men. That never worked out. I had one yell at me once and I was like, oh, this is never going to work. There's something deeper there. I usually had gay male, but older therapists and psychologists. And then most recently started dabbling in the women pool of psychologists. And I don't know where I think it's a journey. I think it's meant to be kind of like up and down and changed as you go through different stages of your life. But then I met you and I was like, why do I not have a fucking psychologist like you? You are young. You are with it. You work at a university. You work with students. Like, how do we get more like you in this field?
Well, I think there are more and more like me in this field. I do think, you know, psychology, I can speak to the psychology training, which is a little different than marriage and family therapy or social work training.
Yes.
I can only really speak to it because those are the tests I took the degrees I have. You know, the training is changing rapidly, not rapidly
Why?
Enough. Well, the idea of integrating culture and identity and how to actually affirm the intersectionality of a person is sort of new and novel in a way where most of the teaching faculty don't have that experience. And most of the people going into this like field now do have that experience. So it's a strange spot that we're in where I think a lot of new young psychologists and therapists in general are really excited to be highly transparent about their biases, really dig into the process of how to acknowledge their limitations. Because previously everybody believed that like to be a good therapist, you must suspend judgment. And I think once you say you've suspended judgment, you've actually suspended your ability to assess for your own judgment is really what happens. Because you're never going to not judge, right? Like, and so by the more you learn to actually be like, oh, shit, I am, there is some racism in there. There is some sexism, some transphobia, some misogyny. There's some gross in here. And let's acknowledge that. Let's name that I've got some yuck. And that way,
wow.
When I have a reaction to something you say, I don't have to yell at you. I'm able to be like, what is this reaction going on in me? So I think there are, right. I think a lot of the new generation of therapists are like me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
That's very exciting. Oh my God. Yes. I mean, I didn't really give you a good enough question. I was just like upset and then just looked to you for answers. But I think the transition too of like, I mean, you'll probably have to speak more to this about your psychology training, but I find it very interesting that, you know, you, work or went to or you do psychology at a university with a lot of like young smart Gen Z people and the people that are teaching about these things are coming from a different generation and I'm curious, like, how does the student become the teacher without like offending the teacher, right? Like, did you ever find that you were teaching your teachers things?
Yeah, certainly. Well, and I'm a queer psychologist, and so there definitely were times where I would be in like my first year of my doctoral program. Somebody would have a question about working with a trans client that they would ask to the professor, and the professor would just look at me. And that was not because I'm such a brilliant person that year one in my doctoral program, I was an expert. It's because, and this is the thing that, you know, my colleagues of color, that people of color in general have been having for so long. Oh, hey, this thing happened in the news. Let's look at the one black kid in class. Let's look at the one. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been an interesting sort of shift in the ways in which people are viewing these questions and how to consult and how to learn, because the first thing was to say, it's not an issue, I've got this mastered. Then step two kind of came, which was white people or people of majority identities, basically. Mm-hmm. Then looking at a marginalized person and being like, hey, teach me about this thing. And now we're starting to realize the ways in which that is not, in fact, like, yes, admitting your shortcomings and then making someone else teach you it is not an entirely broken concept. However, doing that over and over and over again is really burdensome and is not actually resolving the problem. It's letting white people or, you know, primarily most of the things that we're talking about these days are about white, cis, heterosexual folks. I am a white, genderqueer, but certainly cis-presenting person in general. I hold most of these majority identities, but it's this idea that we're having to start to do our own work on our own so that if we have a question, it better be a good one. And it better be one where the easy stuff has already been figured out on my end. And if I'm going to speak to you for consultation, it needs to be really because I've done everything I can do up to this point. And now, because, I mean, I once had somebody, this is a developmentally appropriate question almost. I had a grad student who was working with somebody else say, hey, I was told to come and consult with you about this new therapy client I have. And so I just wondered if you could tell me, like, what do I need to know about doing therapy with gay people?
My sweet, sweet confidants, I just had to take a quick second, pause on the pod, one real quick second, just to talk about my most favorite thing, which is therapy, with my most favorite company, which is BetterHelp. Y'all know I am constantly preaching about BetterHelp, which is an online therapy app, website you can download right now and get matched with a licensed professional counselor in under 24 hours because I truly, truly believe in it. I use it every single week. Shout out to my therapist, Kim. And I also do couples therapy from it. It has made my life so much more manageable during this pandemic. And I want all of my confidants to be able to have that accessibility and affordability, which is why I love BetterHelp, because it is more affordable than traditional counseling and on other online competitors. And they deal with all sorts of things like anger issues, LGBT family life, sexuality, relationships, sleeping, trauma, you name it. BetterHelp is there for you. And I want you to start living a happier life today. And as a listener, you're going to get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/CI. You're going to join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health when you go to BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/CI. DEI.
Oh, don't.
Right.
Pass.
right. But, and so that level of question of being like, great, no, I'm going to do right by this gay client. I'm going to go talk to a gay therapist and he's going to tell me what to do.
And you're like, all that lived experience that I don't have can be culminated by one consultation with someone else who has all of that good, juicy stuff that I think I'm doing the right thing by asking. But I think the right thing, I mean, I'm assuming the right thing at that point is maybe to say I'm not right for you, or, you know, do you, is there like a tip you can give to our listeners of like, maybe they do want to find a therapist that, and they don't exactly align with their gender identity or even their morals or generational morality, to say like, how do you align that with someone you're interviewing? Or question make sense?
Yeah, it makes,
you know,
makes
what I,
total
you know
sense.
What I meant.
Yeah, how do you find an identity affirming therapist is kind of a,
there you go,
a big question.
Smart guy, there he is, the 250K winner.
Yeah, here we go. The more than 250K government ower. Let's cancel those loans, please.
There you go.
I think the thing, like, we're always in every relationship in our lives, we're always micro assessing whether people are affirming our identities, right? We're always listening to ways. And so I think there's sort of the interesting thing about a therapist is you don't owe them your loyalty ever.
Say it again for the people in the back.
You do not owe your therapist your loyalty. It is up to you whether you want to choose to engage in how to repair if they've done something that sort of blows up your relationship. It's up to you. Mm. And sometimes it might be worth it, right? This is healthy boundaries with anybody, right? Like, you can have a friend who really fucks up and says something horrible to you, and you get to choose whether that is a deal breaker or whether it's a way you want to move toward them and invest. And there's no singular response that is always correct, obviously. Right. There are times you want to move away, and there are times you want to move toward. So with your therapist, part of it, you're going to have a little bit of an open mind. But I would see the ways in which your therapist asks you questions about yourself. Because, you know, when I'm talking to somebody, let's say they're you know, a queer person of color, maybe Muslim. They have different marginalized identities that, for me as a white person, might spike all of my, like, oh, this is different, other, you know, marginalized. Really sitting with them and being like, okay, great, you named a lot of things. Which ones feel like they're the most salient for you? What, or even saying like, okay, you're, you know, a queer Muslim of color. Tell me about that experience, because I've got a whole host of assumptions I could make. I'm a doctor of psychology. I could probably build a whole conceptualization just based on what I've assumed those identities look like for you. So you want to sit with somebody who's actually going to be like, so just tell me, like, okay, JD, you're a 35-year-old white queer man. What does that look like? What does that mean? Right? Where are you from? Yeah. Okay. How does that play into your identity? How does that play into your values? How does that play into the things? Because ultimately, I could sit with another 35-year-old white queer man, and if I just assume, oh, we've got all the same demographics, that so we must have the same values.
No.
So I think it doesn't matter necessarily. You don't have to find somebody who has your shared identities. It can be a nice shortcut. Mm. But you do need to sit with somebody who's willing to acknowledge that, like, they don't fully know your experience, and they're there to learn about.
The weather is getting warmer, so it is time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now that I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from 30 doll hairs, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
I can confirm this. I'm actually wearing Quince pants right now.
You are.
They are so, they're loose, they're breezy. These babies have a button, a fly, drawstring, and elastic in the band. So I can like, I can dress them up, I can dress them down.
Yes.
They're the perfect pant for summer, and I'm really comfortable as hell in them.
Honestly, I am wearing the Quince 14 karat gold earring loop right now.
Oh my God.
I know. I think it's so cute. It does not tarnish. It is so comfy, and I have sensitive ears, so I'm really loving this for my body. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Kelsey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Kelsey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Kelsey. Are you looking to cut back on alcohol this year? You are talking to two sober Sallies. You know Zach and I love to drink Recess Zero Proof craft mocktails because it's a guilt-free way to unwind. It has 0% alcohol, made with real fruit, only 25 calories or less, and it is sweetened with agave because y'all know I got that sugar addiction. It has incredible flavors. One of my favorites is the Grapefruit Paloma. The Paloma is actually one of the last drinks I was drinking when I was drinking alcohol. So this is like a nice little nostalgia moment, and it still feels really fun in my hand. And there's no reason we should be missing out on the partying either. It's such a good replacement for alcohol, a great drink for having in between alcoholic drinks, unwinding at home, at dinner parties, chilling on the couch. It is endless. Get 15% off Recess mocktails now at takearecess.com/Kelsey so you can enjoy your favorite cocktails without the consequences. Yeah, because I was gonna ask, like, is there a line, right, where there's too much difference in terms of what you, but I think it's so individualized, right? Like, it's your comfortability level, it's how you do respond to those questions, it's do you feel like you're leaving the session like, oh, I just became, you know, tokenized to teach this person something, or I really got to let a load off my shoulders, or they really asked the right questions and helped me guide that. Like, is there a universal therapeutic experience, or are there like shitty psychologists out there that can really fuck you up and you have to be careful about that?
Yes to all of that, right? So there are shitty therapists. There are just like any healing or helping profession, right? There are surgeons who went into this so they get to say that, so they get to play God, they get to feel the power of a scalpel, yada, 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 right?
Yeah.
They're not there necessarily. They're there for their own, because there's such prestige in being a surgeon, right?
Right.
And there are surgeons that are there because their dad died from an avoidable like heart failure that could have been saved.
Right.
And they've dedicated their life to saving other people's dads, right?
Yeah.
And everybody in between, right? And so and then within that, you can even be in it for the wrong reasons, but still be really good at what you're doing. And still be really helpful. So therapists are exactly like teachers, right? Like, you can have amazing transformative experiences with 3, 4, 5 different teachers throughout your education. And it's not to say that any one of those is a better teacher than the other. It's you met them where you were at. They saw you, they worked with you for as long as you were together. And then, you know, you can move on and you can take pieces of them with you. In therapy, you can come back to them if you want. But so I don't think that there's a single rule of who you click with the most. I will say, I work at a university with a very diverse student body. And I've had really great experiences, at least on my end, with a very diverse number of students. Some of them, I think, are really enriched by our differences. There can be advantages of me not looking like the people in your family who you fear the judgment for, and I get to kind of exist as this fairy godmother outside. And then there are reasons why, you know, why you would want somebody who has those same identities. A lot of people seek me out as a queer therapist because I understand the queer experience. I mean, one of my clients is a straight Black woman who specifically requested a white gay man because she was like, I just feel like I always get along with gay guys, and that just feels comfortable for me. And so that was what she sought out. And we have a great working relationship.
Yeah, so I mean, that herself. I was the only woman on an all, I mean, I identify as queer, bisexual, and I was the only woman in an all, I mean, you know, Varsity Gay League, the VGL, yeah, I'm sure, being in Los Angeles. I was like the only woman in the entire league 1 year. And I was like, is this a problem? Like, A, am I taking up space? And B, what the fuck does that say that I am just like so much more comfortable with queer men than like women? Because is it that I'm intimidated by women and I don't see men as intimidating, or like I don't see men that I know aren't sexually attracted to me? Like, it was a whole year of me every bowling league Monday night being like, hey, can I sit down with you for 5 minutes and like talk about something? Like, I'm glad that the world has changed enough to where, you know, maybe that isn't such a big deal anymore. You know, I'm avoiding saying the word fag hag, obviously, like I'm avoiding that. But to me, it's just so much more normal and it's not such a big fucking deal. Whereas like, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago when it started, it felt so like,
well, I think
sticky.
You're speaking though to like a real dynamic that like there's a word for it, there's a cute little rhymey term for it, not because it's uncommon, right? And that's the thing, right. but cliches don't become cliches because they're rare, right? Like they
but
I do think like there is something to be said for the relationships between gay men and women, and in general gay men and women, that is powerful and safe and sacred.
Yes.
In that there's such an amazing bond to, you and I are allies in such a way where we can see one another, we can get what the other one is into and looking toward, but in a way in which we feel so secure together.
Yes.
And so I think that is not necessarily a bad thing. I think if you find yourself only being able to build strong relationships with gay men, you know, there's the work in the therapy about like what does it say about your feelings of safety around straight men or around queer women?
Right.
Or around straight women.
It totally. And it had to do with the fact too that I didn't feel comfortable with gay women because I was bi and I was living in this, like, I felt too intimidated to go this way. I certainly felt too intimidated to go talk about, I would never talk about this with straight men, but exactly to your point, like I've embraced it as such like a good thing now, and I'm not afraid of it anymore. But something you said when you were talking made me think of like, what was, you know, you said some people get into being a surgeon because they want that God power, and some people do it because their dad, you know, died and they're trying to save everyone's dad. Like, what was your experience into getting into clinical psychology? Because you've been in LA such a long time, and like,
yeah,
oh my gosh, that must have not been an easy road. This must have been a long road.
Yeah, almost it was as long about, as, hey, yeah. I started my master's in psychology in January of 2012. So I am literally closing out 10 years.
Wow.
And I Holy just got licensed. Shit. So it's, yeah. Yeah. So
congratulations.
It's been a minute. Thank
you. Huge deal.
So this is a bit of a journey for me. So I grew up in a very WASPy, we don't talk about feelings household. And so when I was about 22, I lived a very blessed life just in terms of like a lot of bad things didn't happen to me. I mean, I grew up queer in Flint, Michigan, which was not necessarily easy. But in terms of like capital B bad things, capital T trauma, I didn't really have a lot of. And when I was 22, I was living in LA and my dad got really, really sick. And like in a way where we didn't know what was going on, we didn't understand it. And I had, you know, kind of a, wouldn't say strained relationship with my dad, because strain requires like focus and energy. Just sort of an interestingly, like we coexist nearby, fairly comfortably, but not super close. And my dad got really sick, and we didn't think he would ever get better. And I was just sort of sitting in this space of like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know how to identify what I'm feeling. I don't know how to feel what I'm feeling. I don't know how to talk about what I'm feeling. I was living with my best friend, one of the closest friends I've ever had in my life at the time we were living together. And I remember being like, okay, I have to tell her that this is going on with my dad, because it's weird and messed mm-hmm. up mm-hmm. if something this big is happening to me and I haven't told my person.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
so I remember telling her, I was like, Emily, my dad's really sick. We don't know what's going on. I don't know how I feel about it. I don't want to talk about it. I'll tell you when I do. Because I was sort of like, I had no idea. Yeah. And so then a couple weeks later, I went up to where I went to college up near Seattle and sat down with one of my mentors from college. And she had recently been diagnosed with breast cancer. And I was talking to her and I was like, okay, can I ask like a kind of a weird question? Whenever you talk to somebody, and I'd gotten a lot of this, like people say like, oh, it's going to be okay. You're going to get through this. You're going to whatever, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it all really made me angry. Like it was really frustrating to me because I was like, I'm a very literal person and it really bothered me. And I was like, Marta, has anybody actually said anything to you that helped? Ooh. And she was like, you know, my mother-in-law, I called her and I told her I had cancer and she just took a deep breath and was like, shit. And that, like just having somebody else just be like, shit. Not you're so strong. Not you're going to get through this. Not any of the things that move off of the feeling, but actually just being like, this sucks.
Yeah, this fucking sucks.
This sucks. And that like really clicked for me where I was like,
wow,
yes, that's what I wanted. And at the time I was dating somebody really lovely who was like fighting so hard to help take care of me in a way where he wanted to fix it and he wanted to like, and it was one of those things where it was like, no, just let me be.
Things be.
And, and so that really was like one of the kind of moments where I was like, okay,
yeah,
I think that's what therapy can be. And I think that's what I want to do is just when somebody comes in, I don't have to fix them. All I have to do is be with them.
Wow.
And sometimes they are coming and saying, fix me, fix me, fix me. And I'm the one who has to be like, let's sit still. And sometimes they're coming in with all this stuff and I'm the one who wants to be like, let me, how do I fix it? How do I change it? How do I, whatever. And I have to remind myself, because again, I'm the one being paid to be there to actually be like, okay, how do we first hold the emotion before we try to move off of it?
Oof. Yeah. I mean, I saw it. I referenced TikTok pretty much every episode of this podcast and it's running. I think it's fantastic. I think therapy talk is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one I saw the other day that taught, it was a girl who was like, today my therapist taught me how to actually feel my feelings for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it wasn't about here and thoughts and like, you are not your thoughts and da 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 da. It was like, what does it actually feel like in our bodies? Mm-hmm. What are you, where are you feeling it? And I was like, oh my God. Like, you know, it was that same mind blowing moment where I was like, holy shit, fuck mitochondria being the powerhouse of the cell. We do not need to learn that shit in high school. We need to be taught how do we feel a feeling, because that's what leads to, I mean, toxic masculinity was like the only thing that came up, because I just think of all the boys I remember in high school who would like cry at the same time as like punching someone in the parking lot, you know, where you're just like, oh, we all need to learn how to actually feel that feeling. But I think it's really amazing that at 22, that's such the age you learned that kind of epiphanal. Is epiphanal a word?
Make it a word. It makes sense. So therefore, I think it like, counts.
Therefore, we say it is here. That's a pretty profound thing to like activate, I think, for a 22-year-old.
Well, I think it's developed since then. I'm a 35-year-old now talking about this sort of idea that I was kind of introduced to. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing you're speaking to though, right, this ability to feel your feelings, you know, the idea that you can't handle your feelings is like the underlying mechanism under almost all mental illness.
Everything.
Specifically anxiety. Most clearly, most presently, anxiety is the idea that something bad might happen that I won't be able to handle. Therefore, what is everything I can do to prevent it? And if every, yes. And what most people don't realize is that things like ruminating and constantly fixating on something is your brain trying to do something. It's your brain working really hard to fix the problem by preventing it by obsessing over it. And so it's, and wow. when ultimately the thing that you're actually just believing in is that you are not capable of tolerating whatever pain might come Ooh. Because of the thing. That's it.
JD, I think you just broke down, like, the cracked open my head in a way that, like, I've never been able to explain. Like, the fear of having fear mm-hmm. and the loomingness, like, I couldn't really explain anxiety for a long time. And my sister said it when I was home for Thanksgiving last week. She was like, yeah, it's just this constant dread that something bad is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes. I think I had mentioned this to you when we first met, that I had just gotten off of all of my mental health medications mm-hmm. to try microdosing. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert to all the confidants, I had to go back on my okay. medication because... It was fun the days that I was microdosing. I would end up naked in my backyard, like painting or something, mm-hmm. or like doing dance or some weird shit, or like in my Oculus. But every other moment and every other day was just like this open-hearted wound that I was like, oh no, I exactly what you're saying, where I didn't feel capable of handling what was mm-hmm. open and exposed, to the point where I was like Googling some, you know, like week-long IOPs to maybe do over the holiday just for my OCD-esque mm-hmm. symptoms. Mm-hmm. You know, I have the hair pulling and mm-hmm. I have the rumination and shit like that. All of that to say, I think I am a perfect example of probably a lot of the people you see. And I want to talk about with what time we have left. I can't believe how fucking fast this has gone, by the way. Your fantastic interview, if no one's ever told you that, which is interesting because you probably spend a lot of time listening, but you also do a really good time oh, talking.
I want to talk about like I love to talk.
And you know what? I'm going to go and comment about those motherfuckers. If there's anyone that's like a keyboard warrior, it's me. I've been on the internet for 11 years. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about like, what does your clientele look like right now? What do they experience? What are you finding that people are coming in and talking to you about? Because I think you've probably got such an interesting herd of folks.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what you're talking about and a lot of your experiences are really similar to what a lot of the people I'm seeing are having. And I do want to I want to tie this into what you just said and name when you're talking about the power of not the overwhelming experience of not being medicated and not being able to handle these things in a way that feels sustainable, right?
Yes.
And that is because this fear part of your brain is a highly attuned, evolved part of our heads that is designed to keep us from being eaten by bears and snakes and thunderstorms and droughts Ooh. And earthquakes and all of those things. So the part of our brain that is most closely tied to our survival as a species we are now in a time and place where our day-to-day life and death struggle survival is not present, but the part of your brain, the organ in your brain is the same size as it was when we were running from leopards.
That's crazy.
So it makes total sense that our anxiety now, and when people are like, well, you know, so many years ago, it wasn't like, and it's like, yeah, because people were constantly dying, because people were like, because everything was so much more unstable that our anxiety actually had work to do. It had places to go. Mm. It's almost like these autoimmune disorders where we see people being like, oh, your body doesn't have enough to fight, it's fighting itself. That is what this like really, really overwhelming anxiety is. So I encourage you in your space and in your ways to work with your brain to be like, okay, brain, what are you doing right now? And why are you doing it? And how do I actually understand that your anxiety is not your brain working? Your anxiety is your brain working too much.
Trying to fix. And like, love that. Be like, thank you, brain, but not right now.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Thank you. Hey, brain, you are trying to keep me so fucking safe right now. And I want to like, thank you. It is this like overbearing parent, right? Where it's like, you are trying so hard to make me successful that you are abusing me. All right, brain.
Helicopter parenting my own brain.
Yeah, kind of. And so this is a lot of what I do. I mean, I work at a very prestigious, high-achieving university. And so, many students, very high-functioning. And I mean, what's interesting and what I love about working at universities as well is this age between like 18 and 25, which is like 90% of who I see. There are some grad students that are older than that, but mainly, or some non-traditional undergrads as well, but mainly 18 to 25, that is where like 80% of mental illness emerges, including bipolar disorder, including OCD, including, so a lot of these things are emerging right around then. And so it's a really interesting time, and I enjoy the work because I see people with I become sort of a jack of all trades, a master of a few, a master of some that I'm pretty competent in. But then there are things like eating disorders, where like I'm able to see somebody with an eating disorder and assess whether I will be helpful or whether they need a specialist. But like it's nice to me that every person who comes through the door is different. Is coming in with different things, and I get to sort of meet them where they are, so I learn so much by being there. But also, the thing that I love about being there is 99% of the time, being particularly in that kind of setting, people are there, they are coming into my office because they want to get better. And they are at an amazing age where these little things, where if you plant these seeds now, it can really grow into something that I wish I had had. I mean, I was in my own therapy at 30 being told that like my GPA in high school, maybe I don't need to still carry shame about that in a way that I was like,
interesting. That weight.
Yeah. Oh, just like, below, and so the more we can start planning, you know, and these are things that I'd probably heard with different therapists throughout my life, but it takes that, it's the day that the seed's actually able to germinate is its own day, right? And that kind of experience. So it's really amazing to me to get to just sit down with people and name, like, you are not your thoughts, right? Or really starting to build, one of my favorite things to do is really just help people to understand what real self-care looks like and how you can run or exercise or eat healthy out of self-care, or you can run or exercise or eat healthy because you think you're a fat piece of shit. And those things can look the same, and you can be like, I work out as self-care. Check the box, when all you're doing is perpetuating this belief that you are worthless or that you don't deserve love or that you, whatever it is. So this one of my, just like starting the conversation with people about like, hey, are you sitting down all day watching Netflix and binging it because you're giving yourself rest and you're rewarding yourself with that? Or are you doing it because you don't want to write this paper, and every episode that goes by you have more and more anxiety about that paper that you need to write? And so this self-care day is actually making your life harder. And both things can exist.
Is it conflict of interest for me to start seeing you as a psychologist? I know you're expensive because you're fucking worth it, but like, this is why I wanted to have this episode, because you just understand a different generation. Like, these kinds of things, I can't talk to my like older woman therapist who's like a mom who like I love, but just I'm not getting that direct, like plugged in connection, like what you're talking about, because you are us. You know, like I'm sure your clients see themselves in you a lot. And it's such a nice thing to hear. Like, it's just such a breath of fresh fucking air. But like, seriously, are you taking clients?
I am taking clients. I think you and I can work together as friends. And I'm happy to over coffee, talk through all of these.
Honestly,
you'll get the $0 friend special.
I get that free 99, and honestly, like, Zach being our mutual friend connection is my favorite thing, because I have the best fucking time in the world whenever I hang out with him. And so if we're all hanging out together, like, I cannot fucking wait.
There are fewer people like purer and more like open to the world than Zach Noe Towers.
It's annoying. I tell him all the time, I'm like, you're annoyingly like a good person.
And actually, like, It's amazing that somebody can be that funny and that non-judgmental, because most comedy, I feel like, comes from this place of judgment. And
like,
he manages,
dark hurt,
and he manages to just, like, be Such a, yeah, like it's hard to.
Annoying.
I can't, I really can't think of. And he has such a nice butt. Like, good for him.
The best butt. Like,
such a good butt.
He's living his truest form at whatever. He just turned 30, whatever.
I wish I could introduce like a 13-year-old Zach Noe Towers to an adult Zach Noe Towers and be like, let me tell you about this guy. Let me tell you what, like, he did. And I bet 13-year-olds would be both thrilled and also horrified.
And like horny too for himself. That's I feel like biggest self-advocate.
It would be so much of like, you can't say that out loud. You can't say that.
And that's such a good impression.
There are people here.
Oh my God. Well, I love that I get to tell him we just like gagged over him for the last couple minutes of the podcast. But JD, like, seriously, Dr. Barton, excuse me. This was so fantastic. I don't know if it's proper to say like, where can people find you? Cause that's how I always end this. But like, where would you like to be found, if at all?
Yeah, I would love to be found. Especially, I am very excited. So you can go to my website, which is drjdbarton.com. I will be taking a small number of private practice clients. You can reach out through that. I also am on Instagram at Dr. JD Barton. And I will be, actually, if y'all really want to be extra cute and cool, one of my best friends is a PhD in cognitive neuroscience. And she and I are starting a podcast that is called Real Psych, R-E-E-L Psych. And every week we are watching a different movie and being like, what the hell is going on with these people's brains?
Stop. You have to come on my other podcast then. I do a movie and TV show podcast with my two dude comic friends. That would be the perfect guest.
Obsessed. Yeah. It's just a fun thing where we're sort of like, we have all this education. Let's just make like really underdeveloped assumptions about like our first episode is Runaway Bride, and like what the hell is she doing and what is going on with her, and
like her amygdala right now is giving the flight or flight response.
Yeah, exactly. We're you know, they're fake people, so we'll yeah, it's not, so we
would say whatever you want.
Ethically, it's not a good look to do this about real people. But it's just kind of two of us having kind of a fun dumb time together. So Real Psych,
and is that out yet?
That is dropping on January 1st. The trailer will be out this week. So if you could please, if you're listening to this, go and subscribe beforehand. Yes. I promise if you hate it, you can unsubscribe. But having subscribers as you launch is like the best thing we can do to actually help ourselves. Yes. So if you and you want to tap a friend, that would be so, so, so amazing. And that'll be coming January 1. So in just a few weeks.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Doc. All of that will be linked below. Confidants, you know how we are in this family. Go out there, subscribe, show them some love. Speaking of showing people love and subscribing, if you haven't given this podcast 5 stars, what are you doing here? And if it's not going to be 5 stars, please don't rate it at all, because I'm very sensitive. I have very bad anxiety. You know that I can't handle anything less than perfection. You can reach us at Confidently Pod on all the socials. Make sure to go follow JD at Dr. God, how dare I, after all those years, Dr. JD.
I mean, it's brand new. It's only been a year, so it's cool.
Okay, fair. I'm letting it slide a little bit. Fine. And we'll see you next week's Confidants. Bye.